to local telephone company trouble in the area you are calling. Your call cannot be completed at this time. Please try your call later. 078P.
Thank you for listening to Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. Couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. A million bomb for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood, but did you know?
Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hello.
Oh, hey. How you doing?
I'm fine.
Let's go into Skype land, open up the Skype land door, and I see Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
And I hear him, too. I see Gila.
Good evening.
And is that Alex I see over there?
It is. Good evening.
Okay. Again, your microphone is weird, but we'll struggle through somehow. Okay, you've all heard. We haven't been on the last couple of weeks, so a lot has happened. And the story that probably everybody who's a listener to this radio program has heard by now is that that tale that every media outlet has aired, every newspaper has printed. The last public payphone in New York City has been removed from Midtown. I believe that was the headline in The Gothamist. And just about every other newspaper. Yeah. And you know, I can't tell you how many times we were alerted, contacted, given sympathy. People sent bouquets of flowers. It was ridiculous. Look, we have a great affinity for payphones, but, you know, we don't feel actual pain when something bad happens to payphones. We, you know, we're as sad as anybody and a bit angry, too, because I think it's a dumbass move to get rid of payphones. What happens if there's an emergency on a city block and you don't have a cell phone, or your cell phone isn't working, or the battery's dead, or, you know, there's some kind of other emergency which makes all the cell towers not work? Having a payphone is a good idea. Up in Canada, they get it. Virtually every town where you drive through, you see a payphone booth. Everybody knows where it is, and it's a place to go. The lines don't go down the way that that cell phone lines can go down. So it's a bad move, but it's also not entirely accurate, because while there may have been this big to-do about a particular type of payphone being removed from Manhattan, it does not mean that it was the last payphone in Manhattan, and certainly not in New York City. For those who don't know, New York City encompasses the boroughs of Queens, Brooklyn, the Bronx, Staten Island, and Manhattan. Five boroughs. They all are part of New York City. So just because something is removed from Manhattan does not mean it was removed from New York City. There are payphones still that exist. I believe, you know, Rob Gilley, you're in Queens. Are you aware of any payphones that currently are living peacefully in the streets? No? You're muted, so we can't hear you.
How about now?
Yeah, that's better.
Fantastic. I was going to say, we used to have that payphone a couple blocks from us, which, you remember when we did the show remotely from the payphone?
Yeah, that was a couple of years ago.
You were supposed
that payphone is now gone.
You were supposed to watch over that payphone. How did it disappear?
I think it might have been during lockdown. We just looked the other way, and we came outside, and it was gone.
You know, that's what this whole COVID thing was really all about. It was a ploy by the government to get rid of our payphones.
100%.
Yeah, we all know that. Do your research. You'll find out. You will. But, okay, there are payphones, though. I mean, on the subway platforms, there are payphones. Our friend Rebel reports to us that in the Rockefeller Center concourse underground, there are payphones. Friends, there are payphones in New York City. And there are old payphones inside old restaurants that people have forgotten about. I think there are even phone booths in some places. What we would like for our listeners to do is let us know where they are. Take pictures. Say, hey, there's still a phone here. And maybe it has a dial tone, too. If it has a dial tone and it actually works, then that's especially important to spread around. Also, there are all kinds of different companies that can be operating payphones. I mean, I imagine, you know, with customer-owned coin-operated telephones, COCOTs as they're called, anybody can pretty much set up a payphone any place they want. So what's to stop individual citizens of New York City from setting up payphones outside their homes, their apartments, or even inside? They can put them pretty much anywhere. I'm sure there are many, many payphones still in existence. So that story, not entirely accurate. In fact, there was another story in HellgateNYC.com titled "The Death of New York City Payphones Has Been Greatly Exaggerated." And it's certainly true. Monday morning, the city of New York's, this was two Mondays ago, the city of New York's Department of Information Technology and Telecommunications, which is known as DOIT, it really is, Department of Information, Technology, and Telecommunications. They announced the end of an era. They were removing the last working payphone in New York City. Once there were 79,000, and now there are none. So it's their fault. They're the ones that spread this misinformation. It's, you know, somewhat accurate, but it's not entirely accurate. The milestone was marked with a bizarre amount of fanfare, including a photo op of a crane hoisting the last non-functional phone booth away. And no doubt, it will be taken to a payphone farm upstate where it can run around and make as many collect calls as it wants in the fresh air. Actually, in reality, it's going to the Museum of the City of New York. But this wasn't the last payphone in New York City, as we have said. In fact, just a few subway stops down from the press conference in the Union Square train station next to a CVS vending machine. What's a CVS vending machine?
No clue. Wow. I couldn't couldn't tell you.
Okay, well, now I'm curious about two things in Union Square. Omni scanners, I know what those are, and other trappings of our thoroughly modern world. Sits one of these analog beauties, gives a sweet dial tone. It works when you pick it up. It even charges you more for a long-distance call, which means anyone without a 212-347-917 or 718 area code, and the other ones too, which I don't remember off the top of my head. The receiver was clean, meaning somebody's wiping it down somewhat regularly. So, yeah, they exist. Don't believe the hype. Thoughts?
I mean, 646 and 929.
Yes.
I was going to say, justice for 929. But also, no, it does make me wonder if this was just a photo op that got picked up and everybody fell for it. Everyone said, oh, this is, you know, there was a show on TV a few years ago called The Last Man on Earth, and he was not, in fact, the last man on Earth. But if people had believed that in the same way, I can only assume it would happen if people ran into Will Forte on the street and said, hey, you're the last man on Earth. I think this is an overblown publicity stunt that a lot of people fell for. And yeah, I would encourage people around and about to take pictures of payphones they see in the wild and send them to us here at oth2600.com so that we can take a look.
I say go a step above that and send them to the media and say, look, explain this. You know, issue a correction. How about that? Go ahead, Rob.
It also just seems a weird thing to have this kind of fanfare and photo op and press releases about, like, the payphone which was taken away, which was one of the, if you're local, you'll know the Titan payphones, which Titan was the company that inherited the street payphones from Verizon, which was formerly Bell Atlantic, 9X, and so on. But Titan had the contract for these things on the sidewalks, and basically they were more in the advertising business than they were in the telephone business. Their revenue streams were basically selling ads on the outside of the kiosks, and the phones themselves fell into disrepair. They were neglected, but they still worked in an emergency sometimes if you needed them. But I think that might be the last Titan payphone that was hauled away, and maybe someone somewhere just saw the wrong bit of paperwork and took it the wrong way and thought, well, this must be the last payphone of any kind. Yeah. But no, there are more payphones out there, and they do exist, and they are just fascinating bits of history and fascinating things to actually play with. If you go to hellgatenyc.com and find this article about the payphones, it was posted on May 23rd. There's actually an embedded sound file of a call that they made, that this writer made to his editor on that payphone, and you can hear it. It sounds like a payphone, and it's interesting. I like it very much.
This is the HellgateNYC.com article we're referring to, but it wasn't just someone misinterpreting. It was New York City's Department of Information, Technology, and Telecommunications, the do-it people. They're the ones that announced this 2 Mondays ago and said, this is the last payphone in New York City. So maybe they're the ones that should issue some kind of a correction. Go ahead, Alex.
I mean, I think regardless of whether or not it is entirely accurate as to whether this is the last payphone in New York, in Manhattan, Queens, Brooklyn, whatever it is, it does signal a changing tide in terms of telecommunications and in terms of, you know, what kind of society we are right now and where we're headed, because the replacement for these payphones, as we all know, instead of having something that you can pick up that has a receiver, we now have on almost every corner of the city these Link NYC kiosks that have not been, I think, the greatest when it comes to public service, public accessibility. And these Link NYC kiosks, for our listeners who are not in New York or maybe overseas and don't know what the hell they are essentially these obelisk-looking mechanisms, very big, kind of bulky, rectangular structures that are on many corners in all five boroughs, I believe, of New York. And they provide Wi-Fi access to the public. And you can also make telephone calls. You can make local calls. You can make long distance calls. You just saddle up to the kiosk itself and put in the telephone number that you're calling and go ahead and have a phone call right there. But it's not the same as being able to dial on a payphone. Number one, I believe that you only can have speakerphone on a Link NYC kiosk. So that makes it a little bit difficult to have a private call when you're on speakerphone, let's say, you know, on a very busy corner of New York. It's not really an ideal location to carry on a conversation. Number one, there might be some kind of speaker port, but I doubt it. And that would require people to have, you know, non-Bluetooth headphones. And it's just it's a different type of mechanism when it comes to how we communicate. It's not nearly as private. It's not a phone booth. It doesn't have any barriers around the side of it. We are in this area now, I think, or rather this era, that involves open communications. We're expected to just talk out in public, mm-hmm. without any concern whatsoever for privacy. And as Rob mentioned before, I think there's an analog to the Link NYC kiosks and the Titan payphones that were removed, because like Titan, Link NYC does not necessarily make its money from providing municipal services to the people of the city of New York or London or wherever they're located. They make money by displaying ads on the side of their kiosk, just like Titan did. So this business model persists, but the form of telecommunications is completely different.
All right, Gayla.
I think also to kind of piggyback on what Alex is saying, that the press release announcing the end of the payphones came as a joint release from Do-It and CityBridge, the people who run Link NYC.
Oh, did not know that.
I didn't know that either. Wow.
Y'all, it's in the Hell's Gate NYC post. But The other thing, Alex, to sort of talk about what you were saying, is that there are a few Link NYC kiosks across the street from our house, and there's one across the street from where I live, and excuse me, where I work, pardon me. And if the goal is for them to be making money on advertising, they're doing something wrong, because 99% of the stuff I see on the screens are PSAs. Like, if New York City seems to be buying all the ad time, it's all, hey, this is the bus stop near where you're standing, and hey, here's where you can go get a shot, and here's, like, points of interest on your block. And it seems to be missing a step. Also, didn't they used to have tablets that had to be deactivated because people were, in an interesting example of no privacy on these things, people were using the tablets they were there to pull up porn just in the middle of the street at all hours of the day. So they disabled the tablets that were there. And, you know, Link NYC is not everywhere. It's not working as well as it could be. But yes, Do It and City Bridge were the ones making a big noisy fuss about this being the end of the payphone because Link NYC is coming.
So what we actually might have been seeing then was a big PR stunt on the part of Link NYC. But I also want to add to what Gila was saying. If they are, in fact, not having as much advertising as we expected, we're not complaining about that. That's a good thing. If in fact, New York City is taking more of an interest in programming these things rather than have it, you know, be the latest Calvin Klein advertisement or something that is staring you in the face, that's something that, you know, we can live without for sure. These can be very valuable public service devices if they are spread out evenly throughout the city. And if they're maintained, I mean, I like the fact that, yeah, you can make phone calls on them and you don't have to pay for the phone calls. That's a difference between that and pay phones. Maybe that makes the fact that you're broadcasting your call to everybody around a little bit more palatable. It's something for an emergency. You know, that's my thing is covering emergencies that require you to be able to call somebody. Of course, the power issue is still a concern because if there's a blackout, you know, payphones tend to work. And I don't think Link NYC is going to stay up very long in a power failure. I guess we have to test it and find out. Kyle, then Rob.
I think I'm hearing this a theme or a through line of ads in general not serving the kinds of businesses that people are applying them to. It's just not a revenue model. It's not a model you can apply to all kinds of things. And as was said about Titan, they turned into basically like ashtrays with ads and like things that people would stick gum to and like write on and leave trash and like empty drinks and stuff. It was years that they languished in that mode. And we're not installed. And I agree, like, if this is City Leap or Bright Beam or Google Dog Food, I don't know what company it is, but if their way of doing a PR ad is it, just because they have the cranes or the contracts to use the cranes to yank stuff out, I really would rather see them talking about how they're enhancing the kinds of equipment that they've replaced it with. And the other thing I'm hearing and thinking at the same time is that I'm a little bit thankful at least that it's put the kinds and the ways we communicate back into the public psyche a little bit. Like, what was that for? And are the things that have supposedly replaced them, like, serving us in the same way? And the way Titan Boost went was like, this is what we think of public telecommunication. Public telephone, people communicating anonymously, perhaps in some instances, or when they may not otherwise be able to have their own private line of sorts. So, you know, what kind of city is that creating, and have we really advanced? I don't know that we have. I'd like to hear more PR stuff about what they're building and how they've upgraded and made these kiosks more functional and more available to more people the way those phone booths do.
Rob, 1 second. What I would like to know, though, from people who are right now going into the subways to find these payphones for us, who's operating these payphones? What company is actually behind that? Because Titan's no longer in the business. There's no more New York Telephone running payphones. I don't think Verizon is doing it. So let us know who it is that's actually operating that particular payphone that you might find on a subway platform. Go ahead, Rob.
That's a very interesting question. Also, the other functions of the Link NYC kiosks, we talked about them extensively on this program when the Link NYC thing got started, which is they're loaded with cameras, they're loaded with antennas, doing all sorts of interesting things, I'm sure, that they don't talk about. But I really like what Australia did. Our Australian friends have a good deal, because when payphones kind of faded out of use as a revenue-making stream, Australia's phone company just made the payphones free. They left the payphones where they were. Mm-hmm. They're still connected to the phone network. They're still making calls. They just don't charge you anymore. You can find a payphone and make a free call. That's how it is.
Because
they didn't need to replace anything.
Collecting those coins takes a lot of effort. I don't know if people remember this, but back in the day, in the 80s, you would see New York Telephone or whatever your phone company was, you would see step vans, like an Intamin's truck, but they were phone company trucks. Those were for carrying the coins from payphones. They were so heavy, they took so much space, you needed a truck like that in order to do that. I haven't seen a truck like that in a long time.
Just totally dedicated to coins.
Go ahead, Alex.
I had, we basically wanted to make the same point as Rob, even though the fact that Titan, may have been turned into an ashtray, as I think Kyle had mentioned, but, we didn't neglect to consider the privacy component of having a telephone call without having cameras on you. I mean, in these Titan kiosks, or whether it was a booth or something like that, you could go into them, you could dial zero, you could make a collect call, you could put money into a payphone and make a call in a completely anonymous way. Whereas if you were to walk up to a Link NYC kiosk, you'd be on camera because there is a camera facing you. And if you were to try to approach that kiosk from the right or the left, you'd be on camera because there's cameras facing the right and the left. It's impossible, I think, to make a call without being caught on camera from one of these Link NYC kiosks. And say what you will about Titan or Cocot companies, customer-owned coin-operated telephone companies, but at least there wasn't video surveillance of you making whatever call you made. I mean, this is the error of making some kind of anonymous phone call or a tip or something. Just people may undercut, I think, or underestimate the validity of what I'm saying here. I'm saying, well, why would you need to make some kind of anonymous call? Well, think about it from a whistleblowing perspective. If you are really concerned about, let's say, relaying certain confidential information about wrongdoing, you don't want to use your cell phone to do it, you want to do it in an anonymous way, a payphone would have been a great way to do that. But you can't even use a Link NYC kiosk anymore, let's say, to relay confidential information. So there really are, I think, significant privacy implications to this that we haven't all worked out yet.
What you're saying, Alex, here in 2022 must be striking a lot of listeners as very alien, because you're concerned. No, you're concerned with having a conversation that other people cannot hear. You're concerned with walking up to that device without cameras seeing you do that. And I guess, the average person would say, what does Alex have to hide? Why does he want everything to be anonymous and secret? Everything is out in the open. You post your life on Facebook. Every thought goes on Twitter. People know where you are at all times. Why do you want to be different? Why do you want to hide and be that horrible anonymous word? Oh, my God. Yeah, that is how far away we have gotten from the way things used to be. And it's kind of scary. Go ahead, Gila.
I was thinking about that and extrapolating, because also if you think about making phone calls in New York City and you think about transit in New York City, because now we're getting very close to the end of anonymity with our mass transit. Working with Omni, you can't ride anonymously anymore, because to have an Omni card, to put money on it, you have to have an account for it. And that tells you when and where you swiped. And it's creepy. And it's not like you can grab a handful of tokens and be wherever you want to be and no one knows. Like, the city is tracking us in a lot more ways than we're used to.
Well, a couple of things. First off, in the wake of the recent subway shooting, I think a lot of people are going to want to say, yeah, I want to know where everybody is and when they checked in and when they checked out, even though we don't check out on the New York City subway. And there's always that argument that you're going to wind up having. But as far as the anonymity with Omni, I haven't used Omni yet, but I'm thinking about ways to use it. You can use, and correct me if I'm wrong, any credit card that, can transmit, you can use that as your entry pass. You don't have to get a card using that card, right?
That's correct. Yeah. You can use any contactless credit or debit card to pay your way through an OmniGate. But again, that's attached to your real identity or your legal identity. When you get an Omni card, that's a contactless card that you can load money onto with your accounts on whatever else, your credit or debit or bank accounts. But it just consolidates it to that one card you're using.
So that Omni card that you get, how do you get that? Where do you get that?
You get that at this point still in certain shops, certain retail stores. I think I finally found one in Walgreens or a CVS or someplace like that.
Convenience stores,
7-Eleven,
your gift card display.
So
but eventually the MetroCard vending machines will be replaced with OmniCard vending machines.
Okay, so let's say you go to that Walgreens or whatever. For safety, put his talking over your head and walk up to the man and hand him cash. And say, please give me the Omni card quickly. Where's your identification there? You know, it seems like you're getting something anonymously if you buy an Omni card using cash, correct?
It is, but you can only buy Omni cards in small denominations. I think you can buy a $5 Omni card or a $10 Omni card or things like that, and that's not going to last you very long. And you're going to need to put more money on it, and with that, you need an Omni account.
You can't do that in the subway system. You can't re-up down there.
I think the plan is to have it possible to re-up at the stores that sell these things, which you could theoretically do with cash. But I don't know that that's in place yet. But I do know that walking into a store and buying something in this city usually means you're on several cameras anyway.
I don't understand why you would lose the functionality in the subway system. Right now I have a MetroCard that has a certain amount on it. If I want to add to it, I go to a MetroCard machine, add money to it. Why would you lose that functionality with the OmniCard? Forcing you to go to a store or something like that.
Because they haven't put in the machines for OmniCards yet. You will be able to use an OmniCard vending machine to, I think, put money on it as well. But, of course, these vending machines have cameras in them and log everyone who even puts cash into them.
You know,
there's a close-up shot of your face.
Rob, everything has camera. My credit card probably has a camera in it. Everything is watching you. There's no escaping that. But the question of being able to have the account at least – you know, on a credit card, you could buy 10 Omni cards, I would imagine, and hand them out to various people, and it's not attached to their real name that way. I imagine that's what crime syndicates are already planning. And people who are concerned with, you know, anonymity, Alex.
Those people are probably still buying Metro cards right now while you still can.
Oh, they still have subway tokens, but go ahead, Gila.
I was going to say, we're just taking buses with handfuls of quarters.
Yeah, you can still do that. Did you have something else?
You can still do that for now.
Okay. Kyle, go ahead.
Well, I just think they're trying these systems out. And I know from experience, one of the other systems I have a card from, they like got rid of one system and had they forced everybody to migrate onto another system. And I went back and looked at the log to see if I could see any of my past trips, and mm-hmm. it all started over.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So it's like I was never on the system because they had some new management site they wanted to implement. So, you know, all that logging, yeah, maybe when you're using it, of course, it's a lot more sensitive, but may not be forever if they're still trying to figure out what the heck they're doing. So, and there should be a lot more options, funneling everybody into this kind of really, limited stuff.
Mm-hmm. Another option, hop the turnstile. You can still do that. Although they'll probably watch you on camera when you do that as well.
That is still really mm-hmm. dangerous. So, like...
Dangerous how? You trip over the metal bar?
It's dangerous, so...
Okay,
you know,
yeah, I guess it is. You have to stay in shape.
Make sure... Yeah.
Alex Sangila.
I think part of the issue with the Link NYC kiosk, placing payphones, this lack of anonymity, it stems from not just the fact that the cameras are there, right? I mean, if you think for a second and say, all right, well, you know, some crafty listeners, I'm sure were thinking, well, if you went into a payphone, the chances are that you would be caught, let's say, on a public street on some kind of CCTV system that belonged to, let's say, a bodega or a chain store or some kind of outward-facing camera or something like that. And that, you know, if you went to go make some kind of anonymous call, in all likelihood, you'll be on camera somewhere walking there or coming back from that particular payphone kiosk. But I think the issue with respect to the erosion of our privacy rights derives not from the fact that you're on camera itself, but from the very fact of the centralization of all of this data into the hands of one party.
Right.
And that's Link NYC, right? So that means that if you go and you make that phone call and they want to know who made that phone call or what did that person look like who made that phone call, they don't have to go to a court and get a court-authorized subpoena and then serve that subpoena, let's say, on a business owner who then has to collect the data, who may or may not have that data. By that time, it might have been erased or re-recorded or might not have been saving anyhow. But the data is right there. At the hands of Link NYC or Sidewalk Labs, whoever the hell it is that's running these things, has a massive amount of information about what people are doing, where they are going, the networks to which they're attached. You know, their privacy policies haven't been the greatest in the past. And in fact, I think, you know, one of our own who spoke at Hope, I guess it was the last time, and I think the year the prior Hope before that, but our buddy Charlie had found some really interesting stuff with respect to Sidewalk Labs and GitHub that indicated that they were looking into using something called the K-means algorithm to measure the distance that people were to these particular kiosks. That's generally what this K-means algorithm would have done, and he did find some indications of this on GitHub. And in fact, I believe The Intercept wrote a story about this a couple of years ago. Maybe we could relink to that via the Hacker Radio Show Twitter account after the fact, just to remind listeners of some of the stuff we were up to years ago.
Go ahead, Gayla.
Oh, I was just going to say, if you're jumping kiosks, where are you? Because a lot of them now have the tall turnstiles, the gate turnstile that you can't jump.
Yeah.
So I was just curious where you're jumping turnstiles, because a lot of the ones I deal with are not jumpable.
Okay, this is not for spreading around, but basically, you know, the exit doors, you know, alarm will sound, that kind of thing. You need somebody on the inside, obviously, that will hold it open for you, and you just kind of slip in it there, you know, no hopping involved. And that's good if you're, you know, if you're not in the best of shape. Just saying. All right. We don't advocate that, but that's true. Okay, you know, we always have these spirited conversations about mass transit, and they get a lot of listener response, but we are going to move on. Anyone else have any final words on this? No? Okay. Here's a letter that we got, and it was, well, it was unsigned. It's an email address, but I'm not going to read the name on the email address, but if somebody doesn't sign their email, we're not going to read your name. I feel compelled to write just to articulate my appreciation of your decision to suggest that attendees of the Hope Conference not wear MAGA paraphernalia. A long-time listener, I've always admired the political positions you've taken, however unpopular amongst some of your listeners. In my humble opinion, those who took your suggestion as an affront to their freedoms are more concerned with the political posturing of discord and division. Neither, I believe, is the intent of the Hope Conference to begin with. During the last show, you said 90%. This is actually in overtime. We talked about this. Last show, we said 90% of the communication we received was against this suggestion. And I want you to know there are listeners out there who agree with you 100%. Tell Alex I appreciate his humor, and I find him hilarious at times. Yeah, but you see, the thing is, he's not trying to be hilarious. It just sort of, okay. It's a condition.
He falls into it.
It does. It's, yeah. Pratfalls and all. You guys are great. Thank you for all you do. My Wednesdays are not the same when Off the Hook is preempted. So we're sorry for last Wednesday when we were preempted. And yes, you know, we have gotten a lot of positive feedback. I guess, you know, the negative feedback is just louder, which is kind of a parallel to what's going on in the country. You think there are so many people out there that are unreasonable, And there really aren't that many people who are completely unreasonable. Just a lot of loud people keep saying the same things over and over again. And all we're saying in this particular case is that we don't want people to be basically creating uncomfortable situations. And that is exactly what will happen if you walk around wearing a MAGA hat in this area, in New York City, at our conference. It's just going to cause issues and problems. Believe whatever you want. You know, be conservative, be Republican, be pro-Trump. But when you push it in people's faces, you're going to get a reaction. And then that's what it becomes. It becomes all about that. If it's so important to you that you have to walk around wearing that hat all the time, don't think you're going to have very much fun at Hope. And we certainly won't having to worry about you. It's a simple request. And I think most people get it. And I guess we all agree. Okay, good. So we basically had our deadline yesterday for speaker submissions, workshop submissions, panel discussion submissions for the conference coming up in July 22nd through 24th. Now, the 31st was the deadline. I've already heard some heartbreaking stories about why people missed the deadline. Look, if you miss a deadline and you have a good reason, you know, coming out of a coma or, just at the end of a kidnapping negotiation, various reasons. There's all sorts of reasons. Let us know the reason. We'll take it into consideration. You're still going to be at the bottom of the list because there are the people ahead of you who did meet the deadline. But, we will listen within reason. You can still look at the call for participation, which is on the hope.net website. And that'll be pretty awesome when we get everything together. Now I know we've had all kinds of developments as well. The hotels are almost sold out from what I hear, and we've added a bunch of hotels. Go to the website and you'll see what they are that just basically have regular cheap ass rates, right? That's what we're going for, the cheap ass rates in Queens. And they're all within a couple of miles of the convention. So they're easy to get to. Uber, Lyft, taxi. Remember taxis? You can even walk. It's not that big. Or bicycle. All sorts of things you can do. And if you want to stay in Manhattan, you can do that and take the LIRR out to St. John's. It's doesn't take very long at all. All kinds of options. A million options. The website has a day's worth of reading as to all the ways that you can do this if you choose to. Gila, do you have anything more to add to this?
No, I mean, I think that's very important to keep in mind. We are going to be providing information about points of interest in the local neighborhood, things you can do, ways to get around, how to get from the various hotels to each other, and how to get from the various hotels to St. John's, things you can see, things you can do. And the thing we're really trying to remind everybody this year is if you want to stay at one of the hotels here, that's great. If you want to stay somewhere else in the city, getting to St. John's, literally there are 15 ways to get to St. John's that are all on the website. And that's not even talking about if you have a car. One of the best things we can tell you is that if you have a car, driving in New York can be fun, but we have the biggest headache about driving in New York is finding a place to put your car. And we've got a ton of free parking at St. John's. So if you're coming to Hope and you want to drive, this might be the right time to do it. And we're going to link to the St. John's website where they give you driving instructions from all directions. Literally all directions. The only thing we can't help you with is teleportation. Everything else is possible. Everything else is welcome. And wherever you want to stay, we've got a spot for you. So check it out at hope.net.
And the teleportation thing is not finished yet. We're still working on it. So
right. We just don't have a way to write up instructions for it yet. But anything could change between now and July 22nd.
Alex, did you have something to add?
I think the transportation thing is one issue. But, this is going to be a conference that burns so brightly. I think there'll be some kind of starburst-type pattern emanating from Queens. You should just be able to follow the light.
Okay, well, I hope that works out. Kyle, I actually wanted to bring this up with you because talking about vehicles and things like that, we're actually asking people bring their cool hacker vehicles. Now, we have the 2600 van, which is an old phone company van that we repainted, and it's well known throughout the hacker community. But there are other hacker vehicles as well, and we have outdoor space that we can use to display these particular vehicles. So if you have an idea for or a hacker vehicle, if you have a hacker vehicle, we want you to write to us. I can write to hope at hope.net give us the details there. You can write to us here at the radio show, OTH at 2600.com. But if you have something that is of particular interest to the hacker community that you'd like to show off, here's an opportunity. We never could do this in Manhattan. The best we can do would be circle the block in the 2600 van, and God forbid we parked it for 5 minutes, we'd get a ticket immediately. So this is very different, and we'll have the ability to be outside and see these displays. But we want to see what else people have out there.
Absolutely. This fits with so many of the fixing and DIY culture. The people that make and build things are always taking apart things. And we know along the lines of cellular and all kinds of new communications technologies, it's just made being mobile that much easier. And what comes with that, I think, is a lot of vehicles of all kinds, and they're becoming more complex. We've talked about it a lot on the show, and we want to showcase and demonstrate and give an opportunity that people might not ordinarily get to focus on their project, focus on different modes of transportation, whatever it is out there. We know people are working on it, and it is an interesting and evolving area of hacking. So we want to invite that and promote more right to repair awareness and really discuss how people can own modern vehicles that are ever more complex.
Go ahead, Rob.
Okay, just to drift off topic for a brief moment, we were talking about the Link NYC kiosks and their lack of privacy. Our friend Pyro, friend of the show, let us know over Twitter that they do have a 3.5 millimeter audio jack on all the Link NYC kiosks, but that does also require that you be carrying around an earbud or a headphone or something that can plug into that in order to gain your privacy. Anyway, back to Hope.
Yes, back to Hope.
I see. So bring your hands-free systems. If you have a vehicle, you know, tell us about what you're doing with communications equipment, mm-hmm. or radios, or, you know, war driving is still a thing. It used to be a thing with hackers. I mean, maybe there's stuff that people are doing with radio in their vehicles, or who knows, robotics, all this kind of cool stuff. We hear about it. We talk about it. We want to show it off. We want to let you share with other hackers, and maybe you'll get some ideas. Maybe it'll inspire some other people.
And this is new stuff that we haven't done before because we didn't have the kind of space that we have now. So we're just basically thinking outside the box, coming up with new ideas, and seeing what develops. Maybe the 2600 van will be the only cool vehicle there. But I'd like to think that we can get, you know, half a dozen, maybe even more, to be showing off. There's all kinds of possibilities in the hacker community. So we have new hotels. We have the speaker deadline. Also, we have on-campus housing, too, if people want to stay on campus. There's a whole blurb about that on the hope.net website. Just there are some interesting rules that you have to follow if you stay on campus, but that's part of dormitory living, I suppose. Gila, go ahead.
The thing I was going to say is that, yes, there are a lot of things to keep in mind, and this is a new and fun and exciting learning experience for us because we're moving from a massive event hotel where everybody could fit and there was no question to a slightly more decentralized kind of situation. The fact is that the facility of the 2,000 room hotel just doesn't exist. So we're learning a lot as we go this year, mm-hmm. and we invite you to come and be a part of it and find out what works best. Come and join us, be part of this new revolution in Hope.
Plus, the fact is people really couldn't fit in the space
that
we had
true.
Previously. And we're a lot more spread out now, so that will be a lot more comfortable. Okay, also, I forgot this. We have an announcement, a keynoter. Sophie Zhang, Facebook whistleblower. She'll be keynoting at the Hope Conference. She became a whistleblower after spending almost 3 years at Facebook trying to fix the company from within. all kinds of stories. She's going to be interviewed by Yan Zhu, who talked to Chelsea Manning at our 2018 conference. So that's going to be fascinating. But there are so many other speakers. We're posting some of them now on our website, on the Hope.net website, but we'll be posting more as we wade through the ones that have come in prior to the deadline. So all sorts of things are happening. Keep checking the Hope.net website for updates on that. It's going to be fun. Only about 7 weeks away, I believe.
It really crept up on us, didn't it? But behind the scenes, we are doing so much to wrangle every last detail of this we can. And as a member of the speaker committee, I'm impressed with the stuff we've got. We've gotten some really good stuff that I'm very excited about putting on our stages. And just the sheer creativity that we're going to see at Hope and have to perform on the fly to make this happen. As the rest of you said, this is going to be a first for us as well, and we're all learning along the way. And one thing we didn't mention is that the conference is also virtual. So if you don't want to come here in person, deal with the hotels, the driving, and everything else, you still will be able to experience the virtual aspect of Hope. The information for that is at hope.net as well.
And that goes for speakers as well. We do have a number of virtual speakers. The majority are in person, but we're doing a little bit of both, as it is kind of a transition back to normalcy that hopefully we stick around in. Yes, Alex.
Is there going to be, for this Hope, the same type of chat server for the attendees? They're going to be using the same kind of matrix server? That was such a hugely popular innovation during 2020, and I think it really engendered a sense of community that lasted well beyond the conference.
Well, as a matter of fact, Alex, we are reconstituting it and going to be probably, I think, updating, but maybe using it in basically the same way, but perhaps to a lesser degree, of course, because so many people will be joining us in Queens, and it'll at least be there as a communications mode. But that's amidst all that planning that Rob mentioned. So absolutely, we're going to try to re-implement that and make it available so that those that are not physically present can still have that presence, because we found it worked out fairly well, and I think a lot of other people found it useful for getting information and augmenting other resources like our wiki and newsletters and so forth.
Okay, very quickly, because we are running out of time. This happened fairly recently. Happened yesterday, in fact. The Supreme Court of the United States temporarily blocked that sweeping Texas law that restricts the ability of Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube to moderate content on their platforms. They did this yesterday, 5-4 vote. They granted an emergency request from the tech industry to block a lower court order that would have allowed the law to take hold. Alex, what does this mean?
It means I need to get better at removing my mute button more expeditiously, I think. You just call me like that, put me on the spot.
Tick-tock. Time's running out.
It means that we were exactly right about this when we called out these particular laws over the last 2 weeks, because what those laws completely neglect is the fact that corporations have what we consider to be a legal fiction of personhood, and those corporations themselves also have rights guaranteed under the First Amendment, namely the freedom of speech. And so what the Supreme Court had acknowledged in making sure these laws do not take effect during the pendency of the litigation, namely the appeal, is a recognition that, yes, in fact, this does very much implicate the First Amendment rights of corporations. If you force them to publish things that they decide they themselves do not want to publish, that's an infringement on the First Amendment rights of a corporation. And being a private party and having the government come in and tell you that you need to allow certain information, content that may violate your community standards, content that may be anti-Semitic or against your particular views as a corporation, you don't necessarily have to do that. But, I mean, this is a battle that's far from over, and I think we're seeing more and more states again, performatively enact legislation that on its face does not pass the smell test constitutionally. I don't think this is at all over, but I think we should certainly watch to see how this appeal plays out in the court. And what was terrifying to me was that this was really a 5-4 decision, and the dissenters believed in and wrote, I believe, in their dissent that certain platforms have this public sphere component, and we should consider, as Clarence Thomas noted last year in one of his opinions, that really was a, kind of a bizarre opinion, that that companies like Twitter and these platforms should be considered to be something akin to public utilities and regulated like telephone companies. So that's the push and pull on the court, and it was a 5-4 decision. So this is certainly not over. We have to watch this one carefully.
So you mentioned a 5-4 decision, and the dissenters were, as you mentioned, Clarence Thomas, but also Neil Gorsuch, Samuel Alito. Can I guess who number four was?
It was Sotomayor or Kagan?
Nope, it was Liberal Justice Elena Kagan.
Kagan, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, can you explain the logic there?
I don't think it's about political persuasion. It's about legal arguments here. And I think the fact that you had conservatives in the majority here speaks volumes about the nature of the judiciary and the whole reason why that they are appointed for life. They're supposed to be apolitical. I would like to see more liberal justices joining with more conservative justices and considering the issues rationally without regard to politics. I see this really as a good thing, not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a strange thing because, you had Brett Kavanaugh, you had Amy Coney Barrett basically voting in favor of the emergency request against Texas. And,
yeah,
and then you have Leslie Kagan voting against it. So, yeah, it doesn't seem to be political. Yeah.
So, certainly. I mean, one could be more in favor of regulation. The conservatives may be concerned about the proverbial slippery slope here. If you start eroding constitutional rights of corporations, you may begin to erode the rights of corporations under case law like Citizens United, which allows corporations to make certain types of political donations, I think, protected by the First Amendment. So those types of implications certainly come into play and maybe were thought of.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. We are out of time. We will be starting up overtime, though, on our YouTube channel. Our YouTube channel is called Channel 2600. That's the number 2600, no spaces. Or you can just click on the link that's on top of the 2600.com webpage. Write to us, oth@2600.com. And please don't forget to support WBAI, this terrific radio station that enables all of this speech to go out unfettered over the airwaves. Give to WBAI.org, give the number to WBAI.org, or call 212-209-2950. With your generous pledge, we will see you back here again next week and in a few minutes on Overtime. Good night. Mambro.